Welcome to the Ipsos Politics Talk podcast. My name is Kieran Pedley. Now, we don't know exactly when the next general election will be, but we know it's going to be within the next year or so. And so what better time to take stock ahead of party conference season to look at where the main political parties are and what key numbers we should be looking out for in the coming weeks, months and next year. And to do that, I'm joined by my colleagues, Cameron Garrett. Cameron, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Kieran.
And our resident tennis champion, Holly Day.
Ooh, yeah. Woo. Thank you, Kieran.
Do you explain your glory of tennis proportions?
It wasn't quite Wimbledon. It was a very, very low-key local league win, but I'll take it as a historic achievement in North Manchester.
Exactly. A chance to serve is all, Holly asked for, and that was granted. I've been working on that all week. So
how many more of those have we got to come?
There's a few. Niche politics references are always the best ones. On a more serious note, Cameron, we have our latest political monitor out. What strikes me, I think, from a lot of the numbers is the consistency, actually, in the message at the moment. But what did you take away from some of the figures?
Yep. So for the people out there that just want to look at the headline VI, we have a Labour lead at 20. That's Labour on 44%, Conservatives on 24%, Lib Dems on 12%, Green on 8%, and then others around 11%. And what stands out to me there is the Cons being on 24%. That seemed quite low to me, so I had a dig through our archive there. We did have them on 23% in December, just after Rishi took over. So he hasn't really managed to increase it that much, a percent in around a year. And before that, you actually have to go back to January 1999 to get them on 24%. So that's the type of polling percentages we're talking about and the kind of era going, lots of people talking about the mid-90s at the minute and the build-up to the 97 election. So there are some echoes there.
I think it's fair, we should say that if you look at polling as a whole, the Tories' share is something in the region of we're on the lower side, perhaps, and there are others that have them 27, 28, 29, maybe. But I'm not aware of a recent 30. Maybe I'm missing one. Looking at what underpins some of those numbers, it does look like there are still a good chunk of 2019 Conservative voters that are saying they don't know who they're going to vote for. Mm-hmm. And then even when we have the squeeze question, which is when we try and force people off the fence to reduce that number, there's still a good number that can't be squeezed, so to speak. They won't come off the fence. They'll say don't know or refused. But that being said, even if you sort of allocate those people back to the Tories, and why would you do that? But if you did, it only accounts for a couple of points. So this idea of Conservative don't know doesn't necessarily save them, as it were. Mm-hmm. But it might be the difference between some polls that have, we've got 24, some others have them closer to 30. But it's not a good spot for the Tories, is it?
Yeah, no, certainly not. And there was lots, when Sunak was became Prime Minister last year, lots of his brand was better than the Conservative brand, and there was lots of talk about maybe Sunak can pull up the Conservative brand, but it really seems the reverse has happened, and the Conservative Party has kind of pulled down Sunak's numbers a bit. And his ratings at the minute, his satisfaction ratings, we have 22% satisfied, 66% dissatisfied. So that's 2 in 3 dissatisfied with him. That gives him a net of minus 44. And to give that context, those numbers were pretty terminal for previous prime ministers. Boris Johnson's lowest was minus 45. May, minus 44, same as Sunak. Blair got minus 44 too. People have gone lower. So Truss was on minus 51. Brown, Major, Thatcher all got into the minus 50s. But in recent PMs, these numbers were terminal. I doubt the Conservatives are going to change Prime Minister again before the next election.
Don't say that, Cameron. You know, we're due Graham Brady's announcement.
I look forward to party conference at the end of the month. But yeah, they're not that great for them. And then again, looking at the government satisfaction numbers, 12% are satisfied, 80% dissatisfied, giving them minus 68%. Which is in line with where it was when Truss left office, Liz Truss. They were on minus 69 then. So,
well, let's unpick some of that, because does that surprise us? Because I think, to me, a lot of people will think that Rishi Sunak himself isn't especially unpopular. He's seen as okay, but it's the Conservative Party that people are maybe fed up with. These numbers suggest that Rishi Sunak's numbers are was just as bad. I mean, Holly, does that surprise you that his ratings are that low?
Yeah, looking at the our latest political monitor, I think the things that stood out to me were those personal ratings. So we asked questions on kind of personal characteristics, and we asked about whether people feel like politicians are out of touch with ordinary people, whether they're style over substance. Those two are the ones that stood out to me as it's the highest.
People saying Rishi Sunak.
Yeah, the Rishi Sunak is. So 73% of people said Rishi Sunak's out of touch with ordinary people, and 44% said he's more style over substance, and they're the highest ratings he's had on that since becoming prime minister. So I think the government statistics aren't surprising me. I mean, some of the numbers you gave there, Cameron, about them being terminal, the 80% dissatisfied is a big number. That doesn't surprise me with the current state of affairs. It's those personal ratings and the combination of those two that I think were the surprising things for me, that it's his image as well as the government and party image.
I think the out-of-touch numbers in particular, I think, are not just the highest for him. I think they might be, yeah, Cameron, the highest. I think they might be the highest for any prime minister we've tested, although I think that only goes back to 2015. We'll have to check that after the podcast. So I mean, that would suggest, Cameron, that maybe some of these attacks about Rishi Sunak and his personal wealth or his family wealth and things of that nature are resonating in this particular context.
Yep, particularly in the context of the cost of living at the minute, etc. And Labour are going quite hard on that, saying he doesn't really understand the struggles of ordinary people, trying to link it back to Liz Truss again. The Labour Party put out lots of tweets on the year anniversary of Liz Truss coming into power and trying to make that link again. I didn't see the Conservative Party put much out about it.
So we'll come to Labour specifically in a minute, because I know Holly wants to sort of have some thoughts on Labour. But let's talk about Keir Starmer for a moment. So Keir Starmer's going on something of a mini world tour, I think. You know, buy the T-shirt with all the sissies on the back.
Starting in The Hague.
Starting in The Hague. No, I'm not going to make that joke.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to name it. But his ratings sort of stand out as well a little bit, because I think when you look at his, I mean, so the stat that I always have is that the two prime ministers in the past, 30 or 40 years that have won from opposition, that have assumed office from opposition, which would be David Cameron and Tony Blair, both had net positive ratings going into the elections where they did so. But Keir Starmer's nowhere near that, is he, in terms of let's just focus on his satisfaction ratings.
Yeah, so we have 29% satisfied with the job he's doing as Labour leader, and 51% dissatisfied. So when I was saying 2 in 3 are dissatisfied with Rishi Sunak, 1 in 2, half, are dissatisfied with Keir Starmer too. That gives him a net satisfaction of minus 22, which is kind of similar to where we were seeing Ed Miliband at a similar time. So really we're seeing Labour in a similar position to they were in 2015, but they're not facing David Cameron's Conservative Party. They're kind of facing a Truss Conservative Party, a John Major Conservative Party.
But then I think at the 2019 election, to flip the parties round, I think I'm right in saying that Boris Johnson was minus 20 and Jeremy Corbyn was minus 44. So in a way, they're very similar, actually. Yeah. But the parties flipped, obviously. So Starmer's kind of around minus 20, minus 20, and Sunak's minus 40s.
It does kind of lay out some of the problems that Starmer's going to face if he does become prime minister. He's going to be the most unpopular leader of the opposition to become prime minister. Will we get a honeymoon? Who knows? And I think that kind of sets out what he's been doing this week, trying to tackle immigration, trying to get kind of ahead and something to say on some of these problems, which will be building up his intray if he were to become prime minister, to have something to say about it early on.
I think he does get a honeymoon. I mean, obviously, there are degrees of this, there are scales of this, but I think if there's a change of government and he's on the steps of
winning an election,
he'll be seen as a winner for at least a short period of time. I think there definitely will be a boost. What's more interesting, I think, is what does he do in that first sort of, to use an Americanism, 100 days type thing? Do they try and get the unpopular stuff out of the way? Because then that could obviously sort of undo some of that. But Holly, on Keir Starmer, what do you make of some of his ratings?
Yeah, the minus 22 for me was interesting because he's kind of stagnated there for a couple of months. We're not seeing much of a shift. And as you've said, he's going on his kind of mini world tour. He's starting to come out now with some policy promises and make some concrete pledges, which in one way could open himself up to some criticism. And we've seen that this week on his immigration pledges, that the Conservatives, I think, are then seeing an opportunity to attack his concrete policies. So I think that's where he's potentially going to struggle a bit in the coming months. We've said on the podcast for the past couple of months that people were kind of undecided, sat on the fence. They weren't sure what he stood for. If he now starts to come forward with policy pledges, it leaves him open to attack on those things. So it'd be interesting to see what he does with that. The positive thing for Labour at the minute is that 86% of people are telling us they think Britain needs a fresh team of leaders. So people are clearly telling us at this point they think it's time for a change. Whether or not Keir Starmer and the Labour Party are kind of ready to fill that mantle, I'm not entirely sure. And we also have a negative rating this month for the first time in about a year for the Labour Party about whether people think they're ready for government or not. We've got 38% of people agreeing that they think the Labour Party are ready for government, 43% disagree. And as I said, that's the first negative score they've registered for about a year and a half. And that one is probably the one that's going to trouble them at the moment, because people are clearly ready for a change, but at the minute they're not really sure whether or not that Labour are
worth
ready
picking
to do
up
that.
As well, that we are rerunning one of those questions this weekend about whether they need a fresh team of leaders. We're going to rerun that and then ask again, and is that the Labour Party? So look out for our Twitter feeds for what they say about that.
The answer to that will be not
sure. Not sure, don't know.
But Cameron, we spoke during the pandemic, didn't we, about how, you know, at a very layman term in terms of polling, if you go outside on the street and stop people at random and 9 out of 10 people agree with something, that's obviously quite striking. And I think the context of that conversation was about the vaccine rollout and about how the government had really strong ratings for that. And even now, I think if you ask people about how Boris Johnson's government did on various topics, there's not a lot of positivity. But on that, there definitely is, and maybe to a lesser extent, Ukraine. And so if you've got a similar number saying we need a fresh team of leaders in the country, that gives you a sense of this, whether Labour is that. I mean, clearly in a first-past post-electoral system that we have, it's going to be Labour if it's not the Tories. But yeah, whether there's enthusiasm for Labour is a different question, but it definitely feels like there's that palpable sense of time for a change. And Holly, was there anything else in the Labour numbers that stood out or that you found interesting?
Yeah, Starmer's personal ratings on a few of those questions that we polled. We talked about Sunak being out of touch and style over substance. The things that stood out to me on Starmer were that he does really well on understanding the problems facing Britain. So I think people couldn't potentially relate to him, relate to the Labour Party. We've got him on 44% for that versus Sunak on 31%. Also things like having sound judgment, he performs better than Sunak on that. On being honest, which we know is kind of a key one, trust comes up time and time again when we poll people, when we do focus groups. I think that's going to be a really key thing into the next election. And being a capable leader as well, he's leading Sunak on that. So whether that minus 22% net satisfaction rating can translate into something that people can see as kind of prime ministerial material, it's yet to be seen. But I think that's where we're seeing these policies coming through in the past couple of weeks, that he's now starting to actually put things forward so that people know where he stands, what he would do as an incoming prime minister. And he's putting himself about and travelling, as we said, and trying to get in front of prime ministers and presidents of other countries.
It should be said that, you know, the public being divided or unsure about a Labour leader is a better position than the Labour Party have found themselves in compared to under Jeremy Corbyn.
And you just need to be better than the other party.
Yeah, and I think you sort of alluded to that, Cameron, that it's almost like Ed Miliband's Labour Party versus maybe a Theresa May or Liz Truss's Conservative Party or something. Or Rishi Sunak.
What do you reckon, Kieran? What's it telling us about the next election? You going to bet your house on it?
No, I probably won't do that. On the Conservatives and their prospects, I think that there's a couple of numbers that stand out. So the figure we have is that, where is it now, on 61% consider the Conservative Party to be out of date, which is the highest number we've ever had for them. And it's very similar.
That we've ever had.
Yes, although only going back to 2015. Now, to compare that to some figures in the past, 61% said the same. So the same figure said the same about Labour in October 2016 under Jeremy Corbyn. And today, 42% say that about Labour. So it's not exactly the case that nobody ever, you know, if a party's on the course for government, no one calls them out of date. But it does sort of show, it's another number, I think, that shows this idea that the Conservatives maybe have had their time. But, I mean, one of the questions that people talk about online and in sort of discussion forums and things is, you know, can the Conservatives turn it round? And I suppose there's a couple of different ways of looking at that. The first is to say, is there any context of or any examples of a party doing that in the past? And whilst the context isn't the same, you can look at 2017 And you can look at the fact that Theresa May's Conservatives had a 20-point lead going into that election season. In fact, there were local elections during it, and that seemed to validate that lead. And within a few weeks, that lead evaporated and was about 2 points, I think, in the end nationally. Now, obviously, Theresa May held on by the skin of her teeth in terms of forming a minority government backed up by the DUP. So there is recent evidence of a political party losing a 20-point lead.
Do you think it would be easier in government to close that lead? So Corbyn did it from opposition. Is that easier or harder? It feels like it's like 40 love. Can the Conservatives bring it back?
Very good. Very good. So this is the pushback you get. The pushback you get is to say, well, that was different. That was the other way around. Why would a government that's been in power for, I don't know, 14 years narrow the lead in the same way? And I do have a lot of sympathy with that argument. Like no two situations are the same. But it still doesn't take away from the fact that there is an example in not too, you know, distant memory of a lead of that nature changing. And if you look at the polling and election results over the last sort of 5 or 6 years, there has been quite a fluid sort of, it is quite a fluid and volatile electorate. So that will be the crumb of comfort the Conservatives can point to.
Jeremy Corbyn.
Is that, you know, maybe Rishi Sunak needs to channel his inner Jeremy Corbyn. I'm not sure what that looks like. But of course, at the moment, every other number you look at, you've talked about, you know, we've talked about some of them on this podcast today, doesn't indicate that's looking very likely, because, it, you know, 86% or almost 9 in 10 say Britain needs a new team of leaders. Once that sets in, it's a very difficult thing to turn around. But we've also said that there is a lack of enthusiasm for Labour, or that the Labour's numbers are kind of so-so. It's almost like a so-so Labour Party versus a very unpopular Conservative Party. So you can contrive a narrative that says we've seen these 20-point gaps go before and people aren't that enthusiastic about Labour. So maybe in an election campaign, if Labour does some missteps, then things can change very quickly. I'm not very convinced by it, but I think that I'm always loath to deal in certainties in this life, just because there's so many times when it's sort of come back and slapped you in the face. But, you know, I imagine the Tories will go as long as they can in terms of waiting for the next election, you know, maybe next winter or something, and they'll hope something will turn up. But as Holly said, the more Labour show their cards and announce policies, then that does give at least the Conservatives some chance to have a conversation about them. But ultimately, I think as long as the conversation is dominated by the cost of living and the competence of the Conservative government, it's going to be very, very difficult for them. But I don't know, final words in closing from both of you. I'll go to Holly first and Cameron. What are you keeping an eye out for going into conference season?
I was going to say the electioneering has begun. I've started to see, we've started seeing PMQs, and like you said, there's kind of Twitter ads and not attack ads, but you can see these slogans starting to pop up. I'm not sure if they've been focus grouping them yet, but Inaction Man was one that cropped up this week that I think could possibly stick. Yeah. And just the broken Britain narrative. Obviously, there's a lot of things in the news recently about the state of public services. I'm seeing Labour go really hard on that at the moment with the NHS, with the kind of schools and buildings and infrastructure, and they're starting to, I think, get on top of the narrative a little bit on that and come up with a way that they think they can get that into people's heads and build that narrative that the Conservatives aren't kind of fit for the job. And that 86%, I'll be really interested to see in terms of the fresh team of leaders if that persists through the next few political monitors that we do, because once people start, as you said, to get it into their head that it's time for a change, if Labour can turn it around and be that party that people think are then ready for it, and Starmer can be the guy that people think is ready to fill that void, these sorts of attack lines and slogans might start to stick.
And Cameron, what about you? What are you looking forward to? I mean, we've got by-elections coming up in October, I suppose. It's not just about conference season.
For conference season, to be quite boring, I guess I'm looking forward to the leadership speeches. When you think about it, Sunak wasn't at Conservative Party conference last year. He was up in his constituency giving Liz Truss a moment to shine. And he's not really done. I saw a tweet saying...
He might not be at it next year.
Yeah, I saw a tweet saying...
Oh, this year. There's a couple of weeks to go, yeah.
Okay, guys. I saw a tweet saying he hasn't really done many big set-up speeches. So it's going to be interesting to see. And he keeps saying he wants to reset. Maybe this will give him another chance. And it'll be interesting to see whether he can pull it off. And Kieran, I know we've spoken about how last year at Labour Party conference, it seemed that was kind of a start of a narrative change for Labour. They're starting to be taken seriously. And I'm interested to go up to Liverpool and see whether that's really embedded this year. There seems to be a bit of a buzz around the Labour Party conference. And it'll be interesting to see how seriously they are being taken. It feels like they're being taken and starting to be treated like a government in waiting.
It feels like it's game, set and match.
Yeah, exactly.
for the Labour Party. But it's not over until it's over. So that was this week's Politics Talk episode with me, Kieran Pedley. Big thanks to my guests, Cameron Garrett and Holly Day. And if you like what you hear and see, please do like, subscribe and share with friends and colleagues. It does help get the podcast out there and get us new viewers and listeners, and very much appreciated. But for now, thanks for watching and listening, and until next time.